All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
This is William.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back to another 5-in-a-row victory, 5 wins, no losses episode of the London is Blue podcast. My name is Dan. Brandon is out today enjoying some wedding festivities with his family. Not his, but a family member. But you know what? Nick is here. We are here to save the day, Nick. It is the Dan and Nick edition of the London is Blue podcast.
Everybody's favorite edition of the show. I think that's pretty clear based on a tremendous amount of user feedback. Yeah, we're excited. I am also at wedding festivities in Boulder, Colorado. I'm looking up at the mountains right now. It is it's a delight. You know, the leaves are changing over, Dan. I don't know if you have the same in Seattle, but it looks pretty great.
Yeah, it is transitioning to fall. The amber color is appearing on the foliage, and just like that, you know, things are falling into place with Chelsea at the moment. And I think, Nick, the overall theme of the show today really speaks to what, you know, the evolution or the kind of the changing of seasons of this team.
Yeah, I think, you know, Chelsea have won matches in a lot of different ways this year. Resiliency being the overall theme of today's show is pretty right. The team had to fight through some adversity to really get to the finish line, and I'm going to applaud them not for doing so. We weren't sure, Dan, if this team had a 1-0 victory in them this year, based off some of the defensive performances that we've seen. So I think this is a very good win.
I would agree with you. So on today's show, just to cover a couple of the topics we're going to get to, we're going to talk about Callum Hudson-Odoi, how impactful he is becoming, even while he is still working his way back from a significant injury. We're going to go give some praise to Alonso for his screamer of a winner that he scored. We're going to talk about where this result ranks among the performances we've seen so far from Frank Lampard's Blue and White Army. Then we're also going to do a quick lightning round with some Patreon Discord questions from our community there. But before we do that, got to get into an iTunes review we have from Critic and a Fan. 5-star review talking about Azpilicueta's beard. He thinks that maybe Azpi hates shaving Nick. And, you know, I just think maybe he wanted to join the beard gang.
But beard gang is where it's at. Everybody knows that. Although I'm thinking about doing something pretty radical and going mustache for November. So we'll see what happens. Stay tuned. Caesar's beard.
All right. Well, that's why people enjoy the fact that it's a podcast and not in video format typically. So we'll just continue moving along. Patreon, no new
your imaginations, people. Use your imagination.
No new people on Patreon this week, but you know what? It was an international break, so we'll give people a little bit of a pass there. And then, Nick, before we get into the match review, last thing we got to do, we do have some promo codes still running soon from some awesome sponsors that we get to work with.
A couple of quick ones. World Soccer Shop, London Pod, 10% off. You know the deal. So go do that, especially as you're thinking about some holiday shopping coming up. I know it's crazy to say that as it's only the middle of October, but it'll be here before you know it. Talisman Caps, London Blue 10, promo code for 10% off, $35 or more. We'll have a new contest coming with each of those soon. We're trying to get those started and up and running before the end of the month. So stay tuned and you may have a chance, Dan, to win a Mason Mount or Christian Pulisic jersey from worldsoccershop.com. Maybe.
Oh, that's a good reason to stay tuned. But you know what? push it aside. We are focused right now on the match review. It was against Newcastle United, the Magpies. It was a Premier League match at Stamford Bridge, October 19th, 2019. Scoreline, you know it, Chelsea 1-0 Newcastle. And you know what? It was only Marcus Alonso's name, 73rd minute, on the goal sheet today. The lineup, I'll just breeze through it here, Nick. Don't have to worry about it. Kepa, Arrizabalaga in goal. Azpilicueta, Zuma, Tomori, Alonso made up that back four. We had Jorginho, Mason Mount, and Ross Barkley as a midfield three. And then we had the two ahead of that with Willian, Hudson-Odoi, and then Tammy Abraham up top at his loathsome. Nick, this was a little bit of an interesting lineup that came out. I don't think we were maybe thinking that Barkley was going to get the nod, and that kind of changed a bit of the shape. Obviously, Kovacic had been out or had gotten injured during the international break, which brought a concern. Conte wasn't available, so there really was a lot of shifting that needed to occur before this match.
Yeah, I think most people were curious to see if this would be like a 4-2-3-1 or if it'd be a 4-3-3. Ended up playing like a 4-3-3. I'm not totally sure about holistic positioning on the field, but Mace seemed to drop deeper. Ross was kind of in and around, kind of playing more advanced. So yeah, I think it ended up being a 4-3-3 and was pretty effective.
Well, I think even at times it was almost like a 4-1-4-1. It seemed like, you know, Jorginho would be by his lonesome at times, and then you would have this midfield four ahead of them, and then Tammy there, and it was very, very fluid, and probably one of the most fluid lineups that we saw initially. We did get to see a couple of substitutions throughout the match. We saw Reece James with a Premier League debut, which is a huge moment for him in his young career, Nick, and you know, I think we just... He didn't get a lot of time, but we want to make sure we recognize that, because that's a big moment in any young lad's career.
That is correct. Also brought on to help seal the game, showcasing that Lampard's tactics and substitutions are ever evolving. And, you know, I think what was brought on for his legs and really to help kind of defend that lead. So I was appreciative to see kind of something different.
Yeah, Kovacic comes on in right before halftime to give Ross Barkley, who was injured in the opening minutes of the game, a little bit of a break. And then Christian Pulisic came on in the 64th minute for Mason Mount. Just some top line stats as they stand. 16 shots for Chelsea to Newcastle's 5. 8 on target to Newcastle's 0. That is right, 0, none. Possession 72% to Chelsea. It's almost reading like a Mauricio Sarri line from last season. 634 passes to their 259, 87 pass accuracy to their 67, 9 fouls to their 12, 2 yellow cards to their 1. Ridiculous. 0 red cards for each side, 1 offsides apiece, 11 corners to their 0. Nick, the stats definitely don't always tell the story of the game, but this clearly lines up with what I was seeing during the match yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, this could have been a 4-5-0 win. I mean, if not for Brandon's goalkeeper curse and some heroics by Dubravka, you know, I think Chelsea had this one in the bag. I don't think they started necessarily well. You know, I think Frank even commented on that after the match, saying that, you know, the team got off to kind of a slow, methodical start, just hoping to maybe regain their sea legs a bit, to put it that way. But I think overall, you know, the performance of the second half was clinical and it was dominant. And I think that's kind of where the stat line really gets boosted up.
Yeah, definitely an impressive second half by Chelsea. And I think the challenge really was, when you look at the way that Newcastle lined up with a back five, and then, you know, the four with the double Longstaff situation, the brothers in midfield. And it just provided a really bit of a unique challenge, where this was the team that was willing to sit back. And Chelsea needed some electricity, needed a little bit of a spark. And they got that in our first talking point here with Oi Oi Oi, Nick, Callum Hudson-Odoi, who continued to offer some electricity on the pitch today and is looking ready to start making kind of a more significant impact. How did you feel about his contributions in the match today, as someone who maybe was changing it. Because I felt like until he started kind of running down that wing and being a little bit more creative with his output, that we were really looking very flat.
Yeah, I mean, I thought his performance was the best of any of them. I thought he played really well. I was a huge fan. Like, I think what you just kind of mentioned is right. Like, once we really got into the match and we weren't kind of passing for passing's sake, he started taking people on and started just making the game kind of his own. And I appreciated that. I mean, that's what we expect from a guy who makes the kind of money that he makes. And, you know, I think it was good to see him kind of get his creative flair back, where maybe he was a little bit tentative in his first few appearances this year. So I thought he was the best player on the pitch and certainly made a huge difference for Chelsea. I mean, he gave Yedlin all he could handle and more. So, you know, I think that's just he's a quality performance. And then Wilhelm's on the other side, or Wilhelm's just was terrible. So, you know, all that being said, I think Cal was excellent.
Imagine DeAndre Yedlin has to go play for an awful U.S. men's national team and has to deal with that horror, and then comes back and then has to go up against Callum Hudson-Odoi in successive kind of weeks. That's probably not the best type of experience to have to run through in your mind or have to enjoy.
I would imagine that would be akin to being kicked in the nuts and then getting up and being kicked in the nuts again. Not good.
Well, what I will say is what I enjoyed in watching Callum in this match, and you know, I think we had a chance to see him in some of the speed and his breakaway pace last year when we watched him in, during kind of the December fixtures that we were there for. What he was doing today is he was making those quick runs, the interchanges. He was working really well, I think, with Alonso. And again, you know, we were pressing forward because there were 5 to 7 people blocking at any given time. There really was one person, maybe two, in Joe Linton and St. Maximin, who were moving far enough in advance to really challenge us. But ultimately, everyone else was sitting back, which required Aspi getting far forward, which required Alonso getting far forward. And the way that, you know, we kind of talked about in one of the last pods, that, you know, Alonso was occupying some space that Callum, you know, really needed to be in as well. And I don't think that error was happening today. I think they were doing a much better job of respecting one another's position and interchanging at a better capacity this week, Nick, than maybe we had seen them the first time.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think everybody's kind of getting to know each other. I mean, we're only 9 matches in, right? So, you know, you kind of got to look at that and say, like, yeah, there's a lot of room for improvement. I thought Aspi was, again, relatively good today. I know that St. Maximin has a ton of speed and caused a, you know, a fair amount of problems in the first half on some counterattacks. But you look at the way that they were interchanging, and then Aspi and William having to kind of get used to each other, Dan, like, to me, you know, William being on the right side instead of the left presents Chelsea some different types of challenges because he's not as comfortable over there. So I think it just took them a while to kind of get the interchange right. But near the end of the game, it looked like it was humming.
Yeah, as you mentioned the interchange piece, I think the one thing that I'll call out on William before we kind of talk a little bit more about Callum here is just he started to change the game with those horizontal runs that he was making with just a little bit of angle to them forward, where he was, instead of passing the ball directly across, he's like, no, I'm going to drag 2 or 3 or 4 of you out of position before I make my next pass. And I think that was one of the key differences in what we saw in the second half from the first half, is that William actually started pulling the players physically out of position versus allowing them to set. Then we pass it across, and then they are able to adjust quicker, you know, more quickly because they're not having to do as much movement. I think that was a key change that I saw, and I was appreciative that William put that into execution because not everyone was doing that in the first half.
Right. I mean, his outside of the boot, you know, pass that Cal was almost always open for, was a huge part of, I think, opening up the space for Aspie to get further forward, or for, you know, Ross or Kovacic to kind of occupy that space on the right where William would have been. And then William kind of floating in the middle provided, you know, I think kind of like sucked the Newcastle midfield and defenders into the middle, allowing more space for Callum to kind of do some damage. So I think it all does tie together, and it's a big part of Callum's performance.
Well, and Callum getting the, you know, the Hazard level treatment, I think, almost, where he's getting two players kind of keeping an eye on him at all times, you know, with the right back or one of the other defenders. You know, when you look at his stats, one assist, 45 passes, 80% pass accuracy, two shots, five key passes, two big chances created, three dribbles, one. You know, I don't want to get into Jorginho level of assist counting that should, or the pre-assist counting, but he probably could have had two to three assists today. And I don't think that's outside of maybe a little woodwork situation, maybe a little bit of a Dubravka being impressive in the moment. He found a way to contribute across, you know, all areas of the attack today, and even had one of those moments where I thought, this is what Hazard used to do, where he would just kind of know that an incisive run needed to be made, know that there was a little creativity lacking, and decided to push the ball and himself forward into the box and hope that he could make something happen. And I don't think there's a lot of that, even with the attacking presence of Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount. There's not a ton of that with the end product on this team at the moment, Nick.
No, I mean, it's a really good point. Like, Cal, you know, we were talking in the preseason about Eden Hazard, you know, leaving, and like, who's going to step up to fill his shoes? And everyone's like, oh, I think that's going to be Pulisic. Like, we all kind of were not on that train because the styles are different. Cal and Eden have way more similar styles. And I think that's a really interesting point. Whereas I think Pulisic reminds me more of Juan Mata, maybe, who, you know, is much more of a distributor and wants to get into space and make the defense kind of suck in so we can find the right pass. So I think Cal being able to take people on to create his own luck, essentially, is really interesting. And I think if he becomes more confident as the season goes on, especially on the injured Achilles, that he's just going to be a weapon.
Couple other wonderful pieces about Callum here. So he is the second youngest player now to provide an assist in three consecutive Premier League games, assist versus Brighton, Southampton, and now Newcastle. Only Michael Owen, Nicholas, did it at a younger age than Callum Hudson-Odoi.
Yes, he's quite good.
And then one of the quotes from Frank Lampard after the match is saying, Callum Hudson-Odoi was one of Chelsea's best players today. I thought he was good, really good in terms of end product. He looked really, really sharp and a good threat. And I think that sums it up perfectly, that Callum is looking to be that weapon that we need up front to be able to contribute appropriately. And again, as Tammy hits the woodwork this match, as a couple people have opportunities for headers and just aren't able to convert them, the William almost header, or never going to be a header, was kind of a chuckle moment for me.
Ridiculous. Like, that was one where, like, if you played basketball before, like, you go up for a rebound way too early and you don't know what to do with yourself when you're up there because the ball's not ready to come down. And you're like, well, I guess I'm going to kind of flail at this. Like, he got up way too early, and Dan, I'm not sure if you know this, but he is not the most experienced header of the ball on our team, so that really showed through there.
Well, it would have been like the times that Eden Hazard scored a header, and you're just like, oh, okay, that is not what I was expecting. I appreciate it. We are benefiting from it, but boy, oh boy, that does not look as comfortable as a Drogba header or John Terry header or a Gary Cahill header, you know, all of these things that, you know, would be more common. But speaking about defenders scoring goals, I think that's the perfect opportunity to transition to talking about Marcus Alonso. He was the individual who finally found a way past Dubravka and all the crazy antics that guy was Spider-Manning around to do. Got to silence the boos he'd been receiving for almost the entire game every time he was touching the ball during the match. Nick, were you surprised it was Alonso who put the winner past the Magpies and got us all 3 points?
I don't think you can be surprised when he scores goals. I mean, he has a fairly fairly solid goal scoring record, Dan. I know you're about to dive into the stat bomb there, but you know, because Newcastle, especially in the second half, offered almost nothing going forward. They were just hunkered down, hoping to get away with a 0-0 draw. It allowed Alonso and sometimes Azpilicueta to get really far forward. And it was interesting, as we were talking about Cal earlier, I don't think that Cal has the game that he has, if not for Alonso taking a lot of overlap runs and making some dangerous runs in the box. And you know, we just know what he's capable of. Like, a lot of us were hoping at some point that he would be converted to striker when we really needed one, because his left foot is just an absolute missile. I think it would be naive to be surprised, but I'm just really happy for him. You know, like I going into the season, knowing his form last year dipped quite a bit, knowing that most people wanted him gone, it's been a revelation to kind of see him playing this well. And I know it's Brighton, I know it's, you know, Southampton, I know it's Newcastle, which are not world beaters, but you know, he's on a run of form that I'm really just happy for him on.
Yeah, it's the feel good story element of this Chelsea season. Frank Lampard being appointed, Tammy Abraham joint top goal scorer in the Premier League, the emergence of Mason Mount, the opportunity for Reece James to start a game, Willian coming back into form, now Marcus Alonso adding more goals to his Premier League stats total. These are all things that narratively did not make a lot of sense heading into the season, and now they are. And I think that it's just continuing to put feel-good moment on top of feel-good moment on top of feel-good moment. And it's like continuing this level of ecstasy for supporters and fans. And regardless of what people might see or read online about strife and people upset at one part of the Chelsea fan base at the other, I think this is just the continuation of another really positive story. And Emerson coming back and being fit is not a bad thing, because that just means that they will continue to push each other to be better players, be higher contributors. And there might be matches where Emerson is better situated to be the starting player. We've seen previously, Nick, when Marcus Alonso has had to go an extended run without any ability to be subbed out or to get backup or support, that his form can dip significantly. So if anything, Frank having the option to put Emerson in and give, much like Aspi needed a break, giving someone like Marcus Alonso a break occasionally so he can continue being the third highest goal scorer for Chelsea since the start of the 2016 season. Only Pedro at 21 and Willian at 18 have more goals than Marcus Alonso's 16 in total, which is absolutely insane. That is not a bad thing at all.
No, I mean, it's what we talked about with Aspi earlier in the season and why I was so bullish on him regaining form and playing better than he was. And admittedly, he had a rough start to the year, but you look at both of these guys and you understand the center backs have changed almost every Premier League game that we've played this year. The back line in terms of formation has changed quite a bit. The expectations for attacking in every match changed. You know, it was like a 50-50 split against Liverpool that we were there for that one. And then, you know, today against Newcastle, or yesterday against Newcastle, I should say, you know, it was like a 72-28 split. Every game presents new challenges. So these guys going out there and performing at the level that they have is encouraging. And I think Alonso getting a bit of the Jorginho-esque love this season, Dan, has been just really, really good. You know, I don't like to see any Chelsea player go through, you know, kind of a rough patch with supporters. I think that just really dampens the mood around the bridge, dampens the mood on this podcast. And, you know, hopefully, you know, his good form can continue and they can push each other moving forward.
Yeah, I think I didn't know this, but thankfully our friend Nazar did tweet out what the actual chant was at the ground that was going on about Alonso. And it was in relation to the Sunderland connection he had when he was a player there. And Alonso even quote tweeted the Nazar quote. So apparently it was just you're just a sad Macklin bastard was the line that was being chanted. And he tweeted it saying at Sunderland AFC with just the crying face, crying laughing face emoji with it. So Alonso definitely got to taste the tears a little bit from the Newcastle supporters who made a very long trip to Stamford Bridge and go home with 0 points to their tally, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a good point to talk about their performance, right? Like, clearly Steve Bruce is kind of an old school guy. He set up the team defensively to not get anything through. And for the most part, they were pretty successful. I mean, Chelsea missed 3 or 4 nailed on goals. So this could have been pretty ugly at the end if they would have converted. Chelsea would have converted all of our chances. But, you know, I think it's a credit to Newcastle for just understanding who they are as an identity and going out and playing for a really important draw against the top six team on the road. I mean, it's a difficult thing to do. So whereas Brighton offered nothing and were, you know, we could have scored 10 in that game, or, you know, Southampton offered nothing and, you know, it could have been 10 in that one. This was a much harder affair, Dan. I think they played a lot more with more conviction, I should say. And it was just a, you know, kind of a scrappy win, which is good. We need those.
Yeah, they were very much drilled to almost perfection in being a nuisance and an annoyance, whether it was Shar, whether it was Lascelles, whether it was Clark, Williams, Yedlin in that back five. They were making life very difficult for Tammy Abraham. He got that elbow in the back of his head at one point that didn't get any type of call associated with it. They were playing a very, very physical, assertive game to hopefully out-muscle Chelsea in the attack to disrupt us and then quickly counter on the response. There were a couple of dead ball opportunities for them where they tried to kind of cross it in, but there was really nothing there. Most of those were quickly claimed by Kepa or knocked out of the box. But they wanted a point. And when you are Newcastle and you only have 8 points total for the season and your form record is loss, draw, loss, win, loss, now with this match, and you're looking up at other teams who are not doing that, even early in the season, there has to be a concern. So I understand why they did it. I don't admonish them for trying to play the game this way. But, yeah, it made it very difficult for us in this match, and it made it some difficult viewing at times. But, again, I think we talked about the theme is resiliency, and this team showed that they were capable of continuing to just wear down an opponent. And eventually, you take enough shots and you put them in enough places. I mean, the Mason opportunity, if he keeps that low to the ground, that goes in, not just firing it directly at the keeper. If Tammy's, you know, header goes just a little lower, that's in. There was going to be a goal in this game, and I think it's just, you know, it had the feel of one of those. It's going to come late. We're going to have a few minutes of being a little concerned about, you know, if they're going to come back and get the equalizer. But ultimately, that didn't happen, and I think that's a credit to both Steve Bruce for having an idea of how he wanted his team to play, and it's also a credit to Lampard and the team for seeing it through.
Indeed, Dan.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to take one really quick break, but when we get back, we got to talk about our boy Christian Pulisic, who got some opportunity, got some minutes there. We want to talk about this match in the context of Frank's season. Frank's managerial era. How does that look? Some quick lightning round questions, and then we will get you out of here. But before that, a quick sponsor break. All right. Well, Nick, we don't want to talk about the U.S. men's national team. We're not going to do it on this podcast because.
Are you sure? Because it's so good.
No, it is bad. It is bad. It's the dog. It's the gif with the dog in hell who is saying everything is fine as everything is burning around them. So we're not going to talk about that. We will talk about, though, Christian Pulisic getting an opportunity in the 64th minute to come in for Mason Mount, who had a little bit more of a muted appearance today. And ultimately, I just want to give the mic over to you. Talk about Christian. Talk about his performance today. Talk about his hockey assist, pre-assist that he provided to the build-up in the goal that ultimately gave us all 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, I think the important context here is that Christian's had a tough go of it over the last month, not only with Chelsea and kind of seeing more limited playing time, but also with the national team. You know, he was at this point famously subbed out of a scoreless, you know, at the time draw with Canada that the U.S. ended up losing. He was visibly frustrated with Berhalter, and so am I for obvious reasons. But Christian needs confidence really badly. I think today was an astute managerial confidence booster for Christian. I think Frank's tone after the match toward him would even suggest that he's trying to build him up a little bit. And I think he went in and made a difference, most importantly. Dan, he was all over the place, you know, not always successful in his dribbles, not always successful in his passes, but causing real chaos for Newcastle, who had been used to kind of shepherding Mason Mount around, double teaming him so that he couldn't make plays throughout the course of the 64 minutes that he did play. Christian's a whole different problem for them. He has speed that probably Mason doesn't have. He has really, really, really good passing ability in the final third. And generally, I think just caused, you know, my whole thing with him this year is just make a nuisance of yourself. You know, I think he just made a nuisance of himself, should have had a goal, should have had another assist on top of his tally that somehow, you know, I think it was LaSalle, you know, broke off of Tammy and somehow deflected that easy tap in wide. I mean, in the limited 30 minutes or so that he got, I think he made an impact, Dan, and that's all we can ask of a guy who admittedly doesn't seem to have the most confidence in the world.
Sure. I would say that it's mostly positive. I would say that he came in, he definitely had an impact. I think he also was the beneficiary of the Kovacic substitution, whereas Barkley and Mason together is not really something I want to see much more of. I think that that is a very weak midfield grouping when you look at Jorginho, who is not the fastest, but definitely did a very good job in this game. When you look at Mason, who is a bit pacier and is able to offer some defensive responsibility, and then Barkley, who is essentially limping around after the sixth or seventh minute in the match and not able to contribute. So I think Mason struggled with that grouping. That didn't put him or Barkley or even Jorginho in a very good light. When Kovacic comes in, I think that moves things up. But, you know, Mason's also been almost a starter in every single match this entire season and also needs rotation. Crazy idea, I know. And Pulisic coming in adds some of those things that you talked about, the ability to be a nuisance, the ability to get into appropriate space, the ability to set up other players, which was the one thing where you want to be selfish and take that opportunity in front of goal, but you also look at the fact that Tammy, before Lascelles, just makes an amazing clearance, basically was going to be, it, you know, it was guaranteed to be a goal. I don't fault him for that. I think that, you know, he's building confidence in this team and in this side and wanting to be a contributor so that he can earn more opportunities to play and to start and have minutes and hopefully become the type of winger that is one that doesn't give Chelsea the thought heading into summer of next year, thinking that they need a contributor of a higher goal tally or higher assist tally because he's capable of doing it. And I think that's the challenge that he's going to have throughout the entirety of the season, is just being able to come to terms with, you know, we need to come to terms as supporters with the expectations and be very thoughtful around what those are. And then I think he needs to come to terms and prove that, you know, he is going to live up to what the expectations are, what his, you know, what Frank is asking him to do. And I think that's the real challenge here, is that there are supporter expectations, there are player expectations, and the manager has to set the appropriate expectations for the player. And then we as supporters just need to understand that, like, none of this is within our control. It is 100% in Christian's hands. and Frank will make the appropriate decision. Because, oh, by the way, he's just won 5 games in a row for the first time in his managerial career. So maybe he has a couple good ideas about what he's doing, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. Again, for those who think that this is just a Pulisic stan podcast, that's clearly not what this is. I think it is totally cool and reasonable to be excited for Christian and excited to or want him to succeed so badly. And it's also totally within the realm of reasonable expectations to say right now he's not a starter for this team in the Premier League. He hasn't been a starter since the first 3 matches of the year, and he will continue to grow. But for those people who were questioning his quality and just saying that, you know, he didn't have it in him to play in the Premier League, like, God, just chill out. I mean, he's going to do something this year that's going to blow your mind. And, you know, I think in 30 minutes to have the possibility to have a pre-assist, a goal, and an assist, whereas, you know, Mason only had kind of one real chance at goal in 60-some-odd minutes, you know, I think Christian played really well, and I'm just happy for him. I know that Lampard was as well, Dan. He said, I'm really pleased for him. He's a hot topic because of his national team. Everyone has gotten carried away with the short term, but in the long term, there's a lot more to come. I'm delighted for him. He will feel good about that because he should do. And that's coming from the boss, and I feel great about that for Christian.
Well, never in the history of the world have people been more focused or gotten carried away with the short-term or short-termism for long-term. No, that's just not something that happens, Nick. I don't believe that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, again, I think this is astute management from Frank. He had to have seen what happened, you know, with Christian in the national team over the international break. And not only are we short on people, and Christian's a healthy, available option, which, Dan, as you know, the best kind of ability is availability.
Yep.
But he's also, you know, a guy that, you know, I think just needs confidence. And when he has that confidence, he's going to be a weapon. And that's going to be a really, really great sign for everybody.
Well, another thing to keep in mind is that he made the bench and Pedro didn't. So, you know, there are decisions that are having to be made now about how do you fit all of these players into the side. And this is another opportunity where Christian was entrusted by Frank to get something done, and he comes in and he did the job appropriately, which is going to unlock, I think, about like game level achievements, right? It's going to unlock the next opportunity and the next opportunity for him. And again, we are only 9 games into the Premier League season. We are still have many matches left in our group stage for the Champions League. We are in the Carabao Cup. We have FA Cup matches that will come up later this season. There's plenty of opportunity for Christian to be an impact player for this team. We'll talk more about him with one of the lightning round questions we have, but we want to talk about Frank Lampard right now. We want to talk about the fact that this is the 13th competitive fixture for Chelsea under Frank Lampard in the managerial era. We've seen some results that we didn't like. Maybe United away rings a bell. We've seen some others that we've enjoyed. Maybe the 5-2 win via Wolves, Nick. But where does this win, this victory, rank for you among these results? Like, if we're looking at this as maybe the first kind of chapter in Frank's journey as a manager at Chelsea, is this the highest moment? Is this the high water mark? Is it second or third? Is it not ranked that high for you? What do you think?
I think it was an important win. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's the best we've played by any means. I think you would probably look at the Southampton match or the Wolves match to really say, like, oh, wow, Chelsea were really on their game. I mean, even against Brighton, and we were there for that one, Dan, you know, the team played so much better than the 2-0 result showed. You know, that could have been 5 or 6-2. So I would probably rank the Southampton performance or the Wolves performance up there. I also think, you know, if we're in the ranking business here, I think our performance against Liverpool was really, really, really good. I was so impressed with how the team fought back. I was so impressed with N'Golo Kante. I was you know, I was just kind of over the moon about the whole deal. And even, and that was a loss that we definitely should have had something out of. So I think this team has played better than maybe the results have shown. And, you know, this Newcastle win is important, but it wasn't the best we played.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's the best that we've played, but I think in terms of continuing to show something that we need to see about this team, you know, I think we saw that in early in the season with the Super Cup victory or loss, but, you know, full-time victory, extra time victory, because we were able to push Liverpool to the brink with a stitched-together side. You look at the Liverpool match, which I think you appropriately spoke about, and the fact that it was a moral victory, could have been a draw. And then you look at this match now, we're continuing to see shades of things that we didn't see in the side last season, which, you know, I think this match to me showed me something that I didn't see a lot last season, which was the ability to have resolve to break down a side that is trying to play the unstoppable force and a movable object situation. And that to me is so, so important for what it transpires the rest of the season, that this to me felt like a little bit of a watershed moment where we know now and teams know that if they're going to come here and try to break us down or try to force us to break them down because they're going to defend with 7, 8, 9, maybe even 11 players behind the ball, that it's not a winning strategy anymore. And I think establishing Stamford Bridge again as the fortress, as a place where you come in and you're going to probably have to try to compete because there's no way you're going to win if you just hunker in and turtle. That to me is such a massive, massive shift, because we were not there for a large part of last season. Yeah, you know, we had some terrible results, right? We had 6-0 to City. We had 4-0 to Bournemouth. And if we can shift a little bit of the mentality of this team, we can move forward in this moment and say, you can't come here and push us around anymore. That is an awesome, awesome change. And that might be why I'm thinking about it structurally as a much more important victory, even though it wasn't the best, you know, display of tactics or energy or most goals. I think that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. Anytime we can keep a clean sheet this season, I'm not going to poo-poo it. So really happy about that. And, you know, just happy that the momentum keeps going. I think that's the key.
All right. Well, let us know your thoughts. Hit us up on Discord. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up via email, whatever you want to do. Smoke signals, Ravens, all the good things. But let's get through, Nick, here, a couple of questions. Before we do that, we'll just mention 5 wins in a row, 16 goals scored, 3 goals conceded, 4th in the Premier League. That's not bad.
Well, it's not bad when you look at kind of the form around us too, right? Chelsea are on an upward trajectory. A lot of teams, Spurs, are on a downward trajectory. So I think Chelsea need to take the opportunity in front of us, you know, the winnable matches over the next month or so before we get to City, and really start to make a sizable gap in between us and some of our top 4 competitors. The season will get tougher. This, you know, there will be points of consternation as we kind of get into the Christmas period, but this is a really, really good opportunity that, you know, Chelsea has to take on and capitalize on.
Oh, without question. I think that when you look at who we have coming up, you've got Burnley away. We get to play a struggling United in the League Cup. We get a chance to play Watford, who may be a tough draw after watching how Tottenham really struggled against them. Crystal Palace, who've been stout defensively, but as City showed, very, very capable of being beaten. West Ham, who looked like they were heading into form, but kind of dropped off. Aston Villa, Everton. I mean, this is a good run for us. It's a really, really good run. And if we can just stay healthy and stay committed to the process that we're going through, it can be a pretty, pretty good space for us. A really, really good run of matches. But we're going to hit into a couple of quick lightning round questions. We'll bounce it back and forth. We'll get them through here. Chase asking, temper my excitement. What is the one big flaw each of you would like to see this team fix? Seems we've solved our problems defending set pieces. Nick, what's your answer?
Defending set pieces, Dan. I mean, look, we haven't given one up in a couple of matches, but that by no means is a done and dusted. Well, I guess we're good there now. No, there. I mean, it's a huge gap that I still see. And, you know, you kind of look at the free header that that was scored by, I forget, Leal Stryker, but, you know, those opportunities are still going to exist. So I would put that front and center.
I think that's a good call. I would say that I'm going to go the opposite end. I think that the finishing is still something that needs to be worked on. You know, when you look at the fact that we had 8 shots on target and we only converted one of them, this game should have been completed a lot earlier. And that's, you know, Mace's opportunity, Christian's opportunity, Tammy's opportunity. I mean, Tammy's overperforming his expected goal. I mean, this was good to see a game where I think it was almost 2.8 expected goal for us, and we managed to win it 1-0. You want to see from a team that's going to challenge for top four, maybe even challenge for the title if Liverpool have some opportunities or problems. You want to see teams win games when the maths suggest that they should have won it handedly, and you can kind of still force a result through. But yeah, I think finishing is where I would land on this. I want to, you know, I think we're going to concede goals, which kind of takes us to our next question, but I would like to be able be a little bit more clinical still. Next question. Got Big Nash asking, now that we have 2 clean sheets, that's right, for the season so far, how many do you predict for the rest of the season, Nick?
With a healthy N'Golo Kanté or what?
Oh, rest of the season. So he most likely gets fit at some point.
I will go 7.
Oof, 7 more. So it would be 9 total.
9 total out of 38 matches.
All right. I think we got a couple cream puffs on the schedule. You know, you got your Brightons. You've got your Uniteds, you have your Tottenhams. I mean, there's definitely a couple on here. I mean, there's some tough ones though, Nick. I mean, there's your Leicesters again. There's your Crystal Palaces. You know, they're these top 5, top 6 teams you got to be really worried about. But again, those other ones, I'm gonna go. I think we end up with another 10 for 12 total. I think I projected 15 or 16 at the start of the season, which clearly was a miscalculation in my part. But, you know, look, when you get a chance to still get to play Tottenham twice, get to play United one more time, I mean, those you just got to count those ones there, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, and we're playing, you know, I know that we kind of based that off last year's stats and having a lot of the same pieces in place, but this team, while we had a ton of possession today, doesn't control possession like Sarri's teams did, where it was so methodical that, you know, the reason we kept that many clean sheets is because teams just couldn't get back on the ball. You know, we're being counterattacked this season. And so I think it's just a different style of play. I like it better than what we saw last year, and we take it every day of the week. But yeah, it just doesn't leave our defenders with a whole lot of options sometimes. So, yeah, I would kind of hedge my bets and be surprised if we get to 10 more.
All right. Well, Ganazinga 30 said Lampard Morris have found a new way to solve the problem of conceding from corners. So set piece on the minds of everybody right now, even after we didn't allow a goal this game, by not allowing other teams to take any. How long can Chelsea maintain this tactic?
I mean, we kind of covered off on that. It will be interesting to see, because we did talk about set piece form, and it'll be interesting to see, like, if a Ruben Loftus-Cheek comes back later in the season, we have a few more big bodies like a Rudiger, you know, these types of guys in the team, that maybe we go man marking, and maybe that'll help solve some of it. But right now, yeah, I don't think they've solved it. You know, we haven't conceded in a couple of games, which is better than what we were doing earlier in the year.
Sure. Milhouse asking, so it seems to me Frank is starting to use Pulisic as a super sub. Do you think it's the best way to use him? How he's going to be used most of the games? I think we touched on this, Nick, that it's more about just game to game, match to match opportunity, and that we think he'll get his chances as long as he's continuing to prove himself. Do you have any disagreements with that?
No. I mean, he'll start matches as well. I mean, we saw him start and play a full 90 against Grimsby. We saw him play a full 90s earlier in the season in the Premier League. So, yeah, I mean, it's not just a super sub, but, I mean, Frank clearly has his preferences and will use him as he sees fit.
Smooth asking, say, I love Tomori's defensive play and excited for future. However, there are times where his passing is somewhat suspect and downright scary. It's almost as if he is trying to make championship-level passes in the Premier League with many of his passes not weighted enough, creating needless problems in the defensive zone. Is this merely a matter of adjusting to a much faster league, or is this something we will have to learn to live with? What's your thought there, Nick?
I will say that Tomori, over the last three games, has had some pretty suspect back passes. That's probably not a surprise to anybody who's listening to the show, but he certainly needs to figure that out. He needs to get that out of his game. You know, he is still very young. He still has a ton of opportunity to improve. I think we've all been very impressed with his performances this year. But, you know, those types of silly mistakes, Dan, in the Premier League will kill you. I mean, that you're just asking to give away a goal needlessly in those situations. So I hope that he is kind of working on that in training. And then, you know, we see some improvement there over the next three games or so.
Well, I think ultimately, yes, there's something where he will have to continue to improve and level up his game. I think the contextual piece that gets lost is where you're looking at the type of situations where he's being put into, where, you know, there are times where Jorginho in the first half was passing very horizontally, wasn't kind of making any type of vertical passes or forward passes, and they would go, you know, vertical, it would go horizontal out to Alonso or to Asby, or it would go back to Zuma or back to Tomori. And Jorginho was getting closed down because he didn't have a partner like Kovacic, who came in for the second half and gave him the ability to win the ball back, a little bit more interchange. And I think both Zuma and Tomori in the first half definitely had some moments that were a little more suspect. And I think that's more just about what was happening in front of them that became a little bit more challenging, and obviously trying to deal with the speed of Almiron and then also St. Maximilian, who were definitely moving the ball quickly upfield, making incisive runs, being a little bit more challenging. I think there is a level of adaption that needs to occur, but I think it's also, as the team continues to regain health, as we get our best starting 11 out there, I think that will add a lot more confidence to Tomori's game as well, where he is not, much like Zuma, getting stressed to move the ball out as quickly. Because I think that was where, and I don't know if you agree or disagree, but that's where I felt like I was seeing him struggle, is, you know, he, in addition to Jorginho, in addition to Zuma, we're all getting really, really challenged with having to make some quick passes, getting pushed back a little too deep in that first half. But I didn't see that in the second half when Kovacic came on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably right. I don't think there's a whole lot of comparison between Kovacic and Barkley in terms of being able to get on the ball and transition the ball forward and stuff like that. Ross wants to carry it. Kovacic wants to pass it. Ross is more dangerous in front of goal, obviously, but Kovacic is much more dangerous in creating his own space with the ball. And all of this means kind of what you're talking about, that there's a legitimate pressure release valve in Kovacic whenever they get the ball forward, rather than having to, you know, dink and dunk between, you know, kind of the center backs and Jorginho. So, I mean, it's a good shout. There's also just some sloppiness in there, Dan, that needs to be cleaned up.
And 100%. You know,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I think it's okay to say that there's a context around it, but it's okay to say at the same time, crazy that you have two independent thoughts that connect with one another, that he needs to improve certain aspects, that you are still supportive, but you're asking for him to do more, which I'm sure is what Frank Lampard is doing right now. Maybe not today, but as they go through training. And then last question from a friend, Ardale Hale, who we had a chance to see in London, which was always exceptional. Upcoming games come quick. Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. Yep, that's your life, guys. Make sure that you have your doctor's notes, your conference rooms booked, whatever you need to do to make sure that you can watch those midweek matches. Do we start to see some consistent pairings up front with our upfront players? What pairings play best together? Nick, give me your best front three/four right now because of the way we're playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think just based on form, like obviously Tammy's in there. I would like to see Cal and William play a little bit more, but I think the problem with those two is that like I think William on the right is not as effective as William on the left or in the middle. So, you know, then you're kind of looking at like, does Pulisic, who, you know, can play on the right pretty effectively, become an option? You know, I know that William's form has been really good. But, you know, you're kind of looking at like strengths and weaknesses there. So that'll be really interesting to see. They'd still prefer William at this point. And then, you know, Mason Mount, obviously kind of getting forward would be kind of that, you know, fourth option, I guess, Dan. But that's probably the one that I think makes the most sense unless Callum isn't like fully ready for that slate of matches. And then I think there's a little bit more rotation.
I would concur. So if you have a different thought, let us know, tweet at us, give us some feedback. We'd love to hear what's your best front four at the moment. I think the stats are going to prove out to have a pretty similar one for everyone, but there might be some preferences out there that we're not considering. So Dan, the match, man, the match poll, no surprise, Nick. Hudson-Odoi with 63% of the vote. Jorginho in second place with 28%. William with 6%. And Zuma at 2%. It had to be Callum.
Had to be.
All right. Well, league table as it stands, we are recording just a few minutes into the match between the league leaders, Liverpool, and Manchester United. It is still 0-0. But, you know, hopefully Manchester United can continue to be a giant killer from the basement of the Premier League this season, Nick. But Liverpool, first place, 24 points. Manchester City winning yesterday, 19. We are behind Leicester City, who have a better goal difference on 17 points. We have a +5, so we are getting there. Arsenal have not played yet either. Hopefully Sheffield United can do us a favor. Arsenal sitting at 15 points. Crystal Palace at 14. Tottenham at 12, continuing their fun run of form. And Nick, I just can't wait to watch the all or nothing, or the nothing, Spurs 1920 season that is going to be coming of a wonderful docuseries next year.
Boy, did Chelsea fans have fun with that. that was, man, all or nothing. You know, my thought, Dan, and I know that you're an Amazon employee, so you might not be able to comment on this, would be that, you know, Amazon's had a pretty good run of it with success. So they really wanted to show the other side. You know, they wanted to be as objective as they could and show what losing feels like. And they picked the right team to do it. You know, I think they were smart there.
Well, they did the Leeds United docuseries where they do not make it into the Premier League. So maybe this will be the inverse of that, is where a team somehow happens to fall out of the Premier League, though they might've wanted to choose Manchester United instead of Tottenham. Imagine just like how funny would it be. And I say this as a team that in the last 5 to 6 seasons had to consider relegation themselves. Not like it was ever serious, but more the fact that like just mathematically it was a possibility. How funny would it be if the Tottenham Stadium became the biggest and best championship stadium in all of Great Britain? That would just be so perfect.
It's like the ESPN, like, what if I told you? it's all fun. I'm focused on Chelsea. I hope you guys are too.
All right. Well, Nick, any final thoughts before we get it out of here?
No, I have no final thoughts. I have no thoughts whatsoever, as you can tell.
All right. Well, we want to do one last shout out, though, thanking the Chelsea women for continuing their amazing form, winning 3-0 today. Bethany England with the brace. Drew Spence with a goal as well. So, again, those games are all watchable via the online player that they have. So keep an eye on the Chelsea women. They're doing amazing things as well. Chelsea U team's doing immensely well this weekend over the weekend as well. So keep that in mind too. But Chelsea fans, we're out. We got a midweek match. So we will be back later with more podcast action. Brandon will be back too, which you may enjoy. I don't know. But until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep that blue flag flying high.